When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 582, going to recap week two in Fab, which is a fun one. You're going to hear the name Chris Bubik a lot and wonder why. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of recent news, because if you didn't get a good shortstop, or aka a healthy shortstop, T's and P's to your fantasy team, and much, much more. So to help me break all this fun stuff down, a friend of mine, a friend of the show. He's been doing amazing work. He doesn't want me to probably do say this stuff, but I've even texted him that I think his stuff is outstanding right now. He does live streams like 3 to 4 times a week, turns those into podcasts, which works for me in my vehicle. He does a ton of written content at The Athletic, and more importantly for us, a Gain in the Edge Fantasy. So go join the Patreon over there at patreon.com, GTE Fantasy. So go check that out, and just much, much more. He's a character, but he's a great guy. He's a friend of mine. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm just flattered you call me a friend, Bubba. After all we've been through, you call me a friend? Aw, yeah. I appreciate you having me on, man. It's always fun to get on here and chop it up. We can talk some baseball, man. You know, everything we talked like 30 minutes about baseball before we even started, just because it's all up here, man.
Yep.
Much going on.
Yeah, all the cutting room floor stuff. That was what you guys really wanted to hear right there, because we got to the brain of Michael Curlin, which maybe we didn't want that, but we'll see where that goes. But I know what you're up to. Why don't you let the people know what you're up to? Because I mentioned like your streams and everything else. You've been keeping it busy. Really, really, really good stuff too.
So what I've been doing for GT Fantasy, which you mentioned the Patreon. So every day I've been trying to do a Savant write-up, just a little bit of a recap. Not so much now. We're not getting a lot of, you know, the velocity. Everything's starting to settle. So what I've been doing is I'm looking at these players. I'm like, okay, they've been effective. Now I'll go. I'm like, all right, I've noticed, like, I mean, I know I'm not alone. I'm sure others have. But I've noticed like 4, 5, 6 different pitch mixes, like changes for pitchers. I'm like, all right, cool. So we're noting this stuff. We're watching it. I'm making a point to monitor it. But that goes along with, you know, playing time trends, platoon trends, injuries, who's up next, deep league stuff, and, you know, just players trending up, trending down in terms of overall performance. That's just some of the stuff we're covering pretty much on a daily basis right now. And I take some of that, and you mentioned live streams. What I do is I kind of tease it. You know, like I said, I'm putting out content every single day for Patreon, but I'll take a few of the major notes, do the live streams on the, of course, it's Gaining the Edge YouTube, go figure, youtube.com/@GTE Fantasy. Very simple, GTE, 3 letters. You'll find pretty much most of our work here, Bobo. But that's where I'm putting out the live streams. If you're interested in watching, I do use visuals. I go through Fangraphs pages and Savant pages to show people the information for those watching, but otherwise, like you mentioned, I do put it on the podcast, the Base Load podcast feed, so you can listen to it as well. The Athletic, once every 3 weeks, I kind of do a all together article of just lineups coverage. So every 3 weeks, they get to pretty much see what we cover nonstop. And your boy Rowdy Tellez just went deep, by the way.
Thank you, sweet baby Jesus. There we go. I've been waiting for one of those. I've been calling for it. God, it's beautiful. That's what I'm talking about. Perfect timing. Willie Adames and Rowdy in the same game. It's meant to be, Curlin. It's meant to be. We'll go look at our standings when this is over to see how that affected things.
No, I don't have Rowdy on that team. Like, I'm watching closely already on April 11th. That means nothing in like a month from now. God, standings.
Too good. But all right, it's a crazy world of news out there in baseball right now. So before we get into the OC talk, and we're going to miss a lot of the news. We're going to hit on everything because there's just too much of it right now. But we'll start with Zach Eflin. This is where the day started. Seemed like this was going to be the big one. Zach Eflin goes to the IL with a back tightness, lower back tightness, which is never great to hear here because that can just always pop up at any given moment. But that got us good old Taj Bradley getting the call for the Rays, one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball, let alone the Rays farm system. Great season in Double A last year. I made one start in Triple A this year. I'm not a big prospect guy. I'm always like hesitant on just running after prospects, especially pitchers when they make the jump. But what's your thoughts on Taj Bradley, who I believe is starting on Wednesday this week?
So Bradley, we all know, is that ceiling play. No one's arguing the potential there. The Rays are the Rays for a reason when it comes to, and if you know the Rays, you know them for their pitching prospects or their overall player development. So with all that said, I'm kind of fading it just because I think it's a short-term thing. I think people are going to go out there and blow a ton of fab, but Eflin's back. It's a back issue. So what Eflin could do, the minimum stay, maybe 3 weeks, get a rehab start or two in. And then you have, returning Glassnow. Soon too. Glassnow, thank you. Yep. He's returning soon too.
So yeah, he's coming back.
So you might get, don't get me wrong. Other injuries will pop up, but how built up is Bradley as well? We don't know how. He did just pitch 7 innings. You got to think that maybe he'll get to at least 5 and up at the major league level. But rookie struggles, slow starts, the way pitching has been this year. Can we suddenly assume that Bradley's going to come up and just dominate major league pitching? And as you've mentioned, between AAA in 2022 and then his one start, he started 2 games already and shows 2 games started for 7 innings pitched in AAA. So yeah, are we sure his pitch count is even up there? You know what I mean? I thought it was 1. I realized it's 2. I can't count. I guess the point being, though, mostly is the fact that we haven't really seen him have that upper, like that high tier of success in the minors, in the upper minors in AAA, because like even in 2022, like as we mentioned, the strikeouts dipped and then the ERA was high 3s, but underlying indicators suggest he was more of a mid-4 pitcher. And then Bradley this year, again, we can't base anything off 7 innings, but we saw the strikeouts improve, which is good. You want to see the strikeout rate get back to what it was prior to his first taste of the AAA. But I don't expect the leash to be long. Again, 7 innings and 2 starts. What is he built up for? What is Bradley going to come in and do? If he follows a starter, great. But if not, then he could be a 4 or 5. Like I said, you're hoping for 5 innings, but maybe more of a 4-inning guy. And again, it goes back to what? Maybe a month and a half. 6 weeks would probably be best case scenario, I would think. And even then, I don't know. I don't want to take I don't think this is where I want to put my risk. It's a long-winded way of saying I'm out. Yeah. Right now, if this was like a midsummer call up, I'd be way more in.
100%. That you nailed the thing. It's like, okay, if it's just a minor injury, so he misses 2 or 3 starts. Okay, so how much are you paying for Bradley for 2 or 3 starts? And you're not even getting this first start if you're in the NFBC. Like other leagues, you can pick him up. It happened in the Discord. Guys are, by the time they asked us the question, the guy was already picked up. So I hate leagues like that to begin with. Like that's just ridiculous. But people are going to go flying for him, and I get it. Like certain prospect guys who we like Cross and a lot of them, they were all jazzed up about it. Yes, it's fun to see him up, but you nailed a lot of things I'm concerned about in fantasy is what are his innings looking like? How long is he going to be up there for? There's a lot of what ifs in the way there, and he's going to go for a pretty penny come Sunday. So part of me, Kerwin, is really hoping he just dominates his first start and people will just spend all kinds of cash to add him to their team, especially with the way pitching is so depleted right now. I'd be really, really excited to see that scenario take place.
Oh, yeah, that's where I'm at. Where I'm at with you.
I didn't put this one on the outline because this one happened about an hour and a half ago or something, but we'll mention it real quick. Brandon Woodruff goes to the IL with shoulder inflammation. So this was less than ideal. And there's no timeline yet because I don't know if they have to wait for swelling to come down or they're just going to let it rest and see how he bounces back. I don't know. Like he was pitching well this season. So you have Corbin Burns, Jansen Junk might take his spot in the rotation. You got Lauer, you got Peralta, you got Wade Miley. We already know Ashby's done for the season. Adrian Hauser's got a strained groin, but he's starting to rehab back. It's a disaster right now in the pitching landscape, period. Now we lose one of the good ones. If you are a Woodruff owner, what would you be doing in this scenario?
I hope you have something on the bench better than trying to target who they might bring into this situation. I mean, guys like, I think names that come to mind that you could hope to, like, I'm fortunate enough, my biggest league, I have Woodruff as one of my pitchers, and I have guys like Braxton Garrett, and I went out and got a Bubic. So I have those guys to choose from to stream from my bench in the meantime. I'm hoping that those guys can kind of compile enough good enough stats to kind of bridge that gap. And that's kind of what you have to do. You have to kind of play Frankenstein because there is no replacing a Woodruff, but it is league specific. It is league dependent, of course. I wouldn't go out of my way to, like, now me as a Woodruff manager, I don't want to go out and blow my fab on Taj Bradley in as an overreaction. Like, oh, I got to get a pitcher.
Because why I asked the question. People are going to be in that scenario. Like,
it makes Dre Jameson, though, Taj too.
Bradley. It's like, ah. Yeah.
Well, it almost makes sense to go that route, too, because you're like, well, if Taj Bradley is only a four-week filler, that's all I kind of need for Woodruff, right? Because he only might miss the minimum stay, but he could miss about a – I look at it like it's a shoulder. It could be a month. It could be 6 weeks. It sounds minor. Because he pitched really good the last outing, too. So I'm surprised Woodruff is even – the IL spot was obviously a shocker to all of us. But I'm not going out of my way to blow my – I'm trying to be patient and understand it's a long season and attack it with guys I know are sure options. Even like Bryce Elder, he's not available in a lot of NFBC formats, but you get my point. Guys like that, like I don't mind taking a shot or utilizing these fringe mixed league types to get us by until then. I'm not going out of my way to blow my fab and – just to like hope for upside in the process. Like I'm not scrambling, but I'm also spoiled. I mentioned I had a really good start with pitching, so I can afford to go that route too. I don't have to really be like, well, there goes my best pitcher and I have bad pitching like everyone else has. So I'm not panicking. Yeah,
this is a shameless plug and people are probably going to hate me for going this route. This is where having someone like Michael Simeone's SP streaming chart comes in handy when you're trying to like put together, hey, I want to like week to week, fillers basically, like it comes in handy. Just gonna throw it out there. So you're not taking some garbage two-star guys just to be like, oh, I can fill it in with this. No, don't go there. If anything, go get Jose Alvarado or something. Screw it, just go get a good reliever and see where it goes.
What about like a Jacob Junis? He's just been sneaking, he's been getting those wins for you guys just because he's been coming in right after a bad starter will go out, get blown up, or a starter will go out and just struggle and not get through his pitches. Junis comes in, throws like two innings and gets a couple wins already. I'm like,
he's interesting. My attention. He's interesting. Johan Oviedo, who I know you talked about today, I picked him up for his two starts last week, so I was really happy with the second start.
you don't like the first one?
No. But there's I don't pick all two star guys up. I liked him a lot because of I guess the developments he made throughout spring. There's actually signs pointing to a guy that might be slowly figuring it out. So I went that route. You got Matt Strom, who looked really good in his first start this week. They're stretching him out. Guys like that may be available, depending on the depth of your league, doubt in the 15. But you know, your 12s and whatnot, you might be able to figure something out. So, hey, and we'll have you covered at Game of the Edge with your fab for the week. All right, let's talk. We're going to talk one shortstop individually. After we talk about this guy, we're going to talk about the world that is shortstops in a second. So keep focused on this one for now, Curlin. Tim Anderson, sprained the knee. Give him your shocked face. Goes on the IL for 2 to 4 weeks at least. I think it's going to be longer than that if it's a – it must not be that bad of a sprain, let's put it that way. The reason I want to ask you is Lenin Sosa got called up. He was playing great in AAA to start the season. You did a little tweet thing about him. So what's your thoughts on Lenin Sosa? Because, you know, if you're hurting for shortstops, and we'll get into the deeper talk here in a minute, but is Lenin Sosa a guy of interest for you?
So I'm intrigued just because there was the fact that, from what I remember reading an article, this was before they signed Andrews, but they have since signed Andrew, so I don't know how they feel about Sosa at this time. But I do know that Sosa was in the running to break camp as a starting second baseman initially. I think he had an injury in the spring, if memory serves, and that kind of threw him off. But it makes me wonder, because like the team obviously believes in him. We're talking at, 36 plate appearance sample in AAA, crushed it, 2 home runs, really strong numbers. But that's pretty much as big of a sample as spring training, and his spring training was terrible, but he barely played. With that said, Sosa offers upside. There are others. Well, there's another guy that got called up in terms of middle infield that's going to offer way more upside. We can talk about him in a little bit Edward Julian. But I don't know how to feel. Again, it goes back to I feel like they wouldn't have called him up if it's only for 2 to 4 weeks. So this isn't like the Taj Bradley thing where the Rays will send him up and down. The White Sox, like, look how aggressive they were with Colas. If they're going to treat Oscar Colas like that, why would they call up Sosa and not give him full run? But at the same time, again, they went out and they signed somebody I don't know. I guess
they didn't pay a lot for Andrews though. He's one of those that could disappear.
You're right, but the Sosa, I'm curious. I'm gonna look this up. If Sosa even plays other positions, maybe, because they could, you know, like, just the way things are falling out up there right now. I'm just curious.
Everyone's being hurt there right now. It's bad. Bad news bears.
That's what I'm getting. I'm like, maybe Sosa can just play somewhere else, but I don't. Like, I'm just trying to think. Like, he played shortstop, third base in the past, second base, so he can play pretty much anywhere in the infield, which is good for them because Moncada's out. They obviously have Tim Anderson. I think Corbin Carroll is. Oh, I thought he went yard. Sorry, I have the game up there. I see him trotting the bases. No, it's because he flew out. Anyway, so my ADHD is off the charts right now. But yeah, so back to your original question. So you told me to focus on. You knew I wasn't going to. Yep. Back to Sosa. I guess what I'm getting at is, at the end of the day, if they called him up, they know it's at least 2 to 3 weeks of run in the big leagues. I think they might even be more of the four. Like, maybe he's getting a full month, because I don't think they would have wasted a call up on Sosa running hot without knowing he's going to get extended look and run at the position. So that does give me optimism, but I'm not quite sold on it being beyond a month. And that's why I won't be as aggressive as others might be this week.
Yeah, maybe a good stopgap if you can afford it. But that's the biggest thing is your needs and what other people will pay for are two completely different things. And that makes it a whole different bag when going to the fab world. So let's go shortstops in general now. Oh, Corey Seager. Well,
sorry, I think he has second base eligibility, right? Like,
yeah, it should be second base, so it'll take him like 10 days to get shortstop.
Yes. So in 2 weeks, he's going to get shortstop. So people are, I think the way you're going to talk, you're going to bring it up, but the shortstop landscape is a mess. Yeah, so
he won't even fill it in just yet.
But it's almost like Francisco Alvarez all over again.
Yep, speculate and hope type thing. Yeah,
he's going to play more.
What happens if Elvis Andrus goes to shortstop and Sosa plays second?
That's also a very big possibility. You're correct. Yeah. Yeah, so
it's like, then he never gets shortstop.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I'm not, like, again, it's fun. The idea of a Sosa is fun. I'm really trying to wait to go big on some of these fun prospects I really believe in. Because I would, again, if this was a mid-May call-up or if this was a long-term injury for Anderson, I'd be way more aggressive. I just don't know if the playing time is going to be there. So sorry to bring that back up. I just thought maybe there's a chance he gains eligibility there, so that's worth mentioning. Could add to, you know, if somebody wants to go spend their money, go for it. But
it's rough. So yes, the shortstop landscape. There's been a lot of injuries. O'Neill Cruz obviously gone for 4 months at least. I there comes a point where I'd be surprised if we see him except for like maybe parts of September, like type thing. His future is a little more important. You have Corey Seager left with a hamstring injury today. That's never good because Corey Seager likes to do stuff like that. Dansby Swanson left with cramps, apparently. I saw that from a beat writer, and then Dirework in our Discord mentioned it was cramps because he was standing in the hospital while his wife was having knee surgery all day, and he wasn't properly hydrated. That's the report that came out. Seems a little odd to me, but okay. So and that's just a few of them. There's a ton of shortstops that are out. It's getting bad and really bad. So how are you looking at this situation? Because I know we need one on one of our teams. So how are we doing this, Curlin?
If you can get Orlando Arcia, just be a little aggressive this week, I guess. But yeah, what's even in shallower formats, we talked about 12 teamers. There's really not much out there. Shortstop was a position a lot of people double tapped. A lot of people made a point to get at least one good one with upside for their bench even. Guys like Bryce Terang, who have shortstop eligibility, are already scooped up. So we are looking at guys. It goes like the list I put out on Twitter was like Kyle Farmer, especially if, you know, Correa is out. Miguel Rojas, just because he exists. Geraldo Perdomo actually has a little bit of upside. There's a little bit of a swing, like a change in approach I've seen early on in his profile. But again, so early, it's hard to say. But he does, looks like Perdomo at least has the strong side of a platoon. A guy I do like more than most probably is Jose Barrero, just because he's been playing plenty. Newman hasn't really been a factor, and Barrero gets to call Great America Small Park his home. So that's kind of like the upside play. Rodolfo Castro, he kind of has a cult following in fantasy circles, and he's going to play more shortstop with what's his face out, O'Neill out, so O'Neill Cruz out. And then Gio Urshela, if you're in a super deep league and you have to, like, Urshela should probably get shortstop eligibility probably by the end of the week if Rendon plays enough games, because Urshela's going to scoot back over to shortstop. I think tonight made five starts. So those are just some of the names. If you want to get cute, remember Kevin Smith, the spring training darling of last year? Yeah. He's back up and he played shortstop the last two nights. don't know how long
he was playing good in AAA for Oakland. A small sample, but he was playing pretty good.
I know, but then he came up, and I think he went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts last night. I haven't checked tonight's box scores yet, but
I had that game on most of the night. I never heard his name mentioned, and there was a lot of offense. So
yeah, I watched him. I put the game on for a little bit before I got busy. I saw him strike out. I was like, oh, that's Kevin Smith. I know. That's yep. Yeah, so it's weird, man. He's just one of those guys that hasn't been able to make that like success in the minors translate. But overall, he is a name. I guess it's one of those things where you're looking for anybody with potential, and he kind of pops out as somebody with potential, but not a guy I'd be going more than like $5 to $10 on if I could avoid it type of thing. Just if you're trying to go for upside, that's kind of an upside play. But I'm sure somebody will throw 15 at him or something stupid, yeah. Especially if he hits a home run or steals a base before now and Sunday.
Forgive me if you said it, but I think Rodolfo Castro is an easy look too. He'll gain shortstop. So
I called him a cult following.
Okay, sorry.
Because yeah. No, that's fine. Oh, I threw out like five names. You know, I didn't give you any opportunity to actually speak.
Well, I was loading. I was trying to load something for my. I loaded up one of my OCs, and I was looking at roster rates for shortstops with 12 teamers, and players Arcia is 68%, and there's a giant cliff. You have Enrique Hernandez, who's hitting like a buck 11 or something, Edmundo Sosa, Kyle Farmer, Geraldo Perdomo, like you mentioned. Yeah, wow, Kevin Newman.
I'm gonna pull up my main, and I'm gonna
like,
go look at
this is horrific here. Dude, I'm going through like Jose Barrero is 0% rostered. You got that going for you, but this is gonna be brutal come Sunday if you're needing a shortstop.
JP Crawford is available in my 15 teamer. He plays every day. If you're again,
I'd swipe him up so fast, even just to block somebody.
That's the thing. It's like, Mauricio Dubon. He's right. Here's the thing
about a lot. He's playing a lot for
you. He's also hitting. He's hitting in 300 early on, yep. Like over 300 early on. He has where is it? Trying to see weekly. He's bat 375 last week. He's hitting 600 this week. Obviously, two games. He's gonna give you a little. He's not gonna give you much in terms of juice, but he's gonna play But that's the thing. Right now, he's gonna play. You know what I mean? Yep. Like if he struggles, he won't be playing. It's just it's terrible.
You get Brantley back. You get Altuve back. You get some of those players back.
You also everything. A three game like rough patch, and next you know, Hensley's back in there too. That's another thing. That's another issue. Would you think about? Possibly it's early to stash him, but like say you're an O'Neill Cruz manager and these are the options we just talked about. Would you consider stashing Luis Urias, or I think it's way too early probably at this point, but he's available in most places and you're going to be without a shortstop for a while.
That's probably like 2 weeks from now. You start looking at that.
I know, but it's one of those things where it's like, do you try to get
someone will do it. Someone will do it for like a buck this week.
That's the thing. It's a buck. And if you need that roster spot, he's droppable again. That's why I'm just looking at. I know
it's not the worst thing you could do.
I know it's early. I don't think you should do it, but it's just I'm looking at this list of players, and that's kind of what's sticking out to me right now.
It's so bad. And it's weird because like in years past, everyone talks about how deep shortstop is and all these things in draft season. But then even this year, people started to kind of catch on to like, there's like a top tier and then it just falls off a cliff. Like there's options that you could live with, but it just falls off a cliff. And right now it's some of the top tier guys are falling off the cliff with them. And that's what's making it very tricky. Like O'Neill Cruz, Seager, you have potentially Swanson. We'll see how that plays out. Tim Anderson. These are all dudes that were on top of the cliff, not off of the cliff. And so there's like six left standing right now. It's literally Hunger Games at shortstop. So we're going to have to see how that one plays out, but and there will be like Julian, I believe, will have shortstop once he gets official. He has to play a game for the NFBC to put him on. We'll see what they do with Lennon Sosa, but I'm pretty sure he's just going to be second base to start with. Keep an eye on guys that are changing, getting eligibility, because that's starting to come up. Vargas got his at second base on Tuesday and a few other guys. So maybe someone's going to sneak in a shortstop for you and make you feel a little better about life. So we'll see.
Julian has second base eligibility on NFBC right now.
Ooh, so that'll sting as well. Fine.
Yeah, I had to look that up. I'm like, so yeah. Edmundo Sosa season, baby. If only he, yeah. I don't know why are they playing Cody Clemens over him? That's a whole other discussion, I guess.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion.
That's ridiculous.
That's just bad teams being bad teams is what that's called. Because the Phillies aren't that bad of a team. Let's go to the Tyler O'Neill conundrum. I just kind of picked random things to talk about outside of the main news. But Tyler O'Neill, angers his manager, who at this rate, if he keeps trying to be Mr. Tough Guy, is probably going to get fired by the All-Star break, because he has a great roster that he's finding a way to run into the ground right now. Tyler O'Neill obviously did not quote-unquote hustle on a play and got thrown out at home. But then if you watch the film, the guy should never have sent him at third base to begin with. Like, there was a kind of a, yeah, let's take some accountability on the coach's side of the situation. And then he aired it out in front of everybody in the media. And that cannot make Tyler O'Neill or any other player actually pretty happy about that, knowing that if I screw up, it's going to get aired out too. That's not how things go. So that's a whole other conversation. But Tyler O'Neill goes to Coors. He sits against a righty, gets to play against a lefty because of some shenanigans. He's really in the doghouse right now, and this is not good, Mike. So how are we going about, like, it's hard to drop Tyler O'Neill, obviously, but it's hard to start him as well.
Oh, I'm definitely – it's one of those things, like, you kind of sit and wait. Right now, and you mentioned – I think we talked about tonight that everyone was reacting to the whole, like, hey, he was not in the lineup for the second straight day and against the lefty, and the next you know, he is. And then I just – a little digging, and I found that Carlson was slated to start over him tonight, so this would have been two straight nights that Tyler O'Neill was sitting. And that is concerning because, obviously, they're playing these games with him. You can't, how can a guy get into a groove if he's not playing regularly? And O'Neill has the skills, but now is he going to press because he has to try to prove that he deserves it? Like, there's a whole bunch of, you know, there's a whole bunch of mind stuff that goes into this that you can't put numbers behind. And right now, it's hard to start him with any confidence. And it sucks because, you know, they get good matchups and you can't even count on him being in the lineup. It's obviously going to change if Carlson has to miss a few games. That kind of helps matters. And maybe with that, things can kind of mend themselves. But right now, if you have a choice, like, I'm probably sitting him. He's definitely not dropping anytime soon.
Yeah, that's the shame of it. I was, like, completely off of him early in draft season. Started to like his ADP and more as I was researching as the season went on. Draft season went on. So I got like a share or two, but he's definitely parked on the bench. And it makes me mad. Guy
for me.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not cool at all. I mentioned earlier, and I was very, very honest, that you've been putting in some awesome work. I listen to it every day it comes out because you highlight like 10 things, give or take, and Mike likes to ramble, so it turns into like 15 or 20 sometimes. And but they're like deep dives, but quick deep dives, if that makes sense, on different players from just researching stuff. So it kind of opens your eyes to even lineup situations or, you know, new developments, either pitch mix-wise or approaches at the plate or whatever. So things to kind of keep an eye on. Has anything else stood out to you before we start talking Fab from week two?
Well, one thing we talk about tonight that's going to be a little spoiler alert, because I think I might go live tomorrow and talk about it, but for those listening, you'll get it twice. It's the Josiah Gray thing. The fact, yep, that he's like, the fact, glorious, that he's just changing everything about himself in terms of like the pitch mix. You know, the CSW tonight wasn't great.
He only had three Ks or something like that.
But he made the pitch mix work. He's throwing the four seamer was just so hittable last year. The issue is all his fastballs are hittable. Like this year, he's throwing the cutter more than last year. The sinkers, they're both everything's getting hit that he throws hard. But what's good about Gray is that he's leading with the slider curveball combo, and that's something he's been doing from not just one start; it's been every start. So noticing he's changing it up, trying to making an actual change, and he's getting some results. I don't think he's much more. I still don't think of him as much more than a streamer. But at least he's a viable streamer now. It was before, like, you're holding your breath and hope for the best. Now you can go into like a two-start week and you're like, okay, he gets Detroit and I don't know, at Colorado. You're like, okay, I know the Detroit one should still be good, but that Colorado one might hurt. But maybe that Colorado, like, we just saw him go to Colorado and actually pitch well. So not saying that'll happen every time because it's Coors, and now that, you know, the Coors hangover is gonna start taking effect, hitters are gonna get used to being there, et cetera, et cetera. But maybe what would have been like a 7 or 8 earned run outing might turn to a 4 earned run outing for him. So that's why it's like Gray is going to be one of those guys where you're going to be able to, like, it won't be so painful to start him for 2 start weeks. And even one start matchups, he's not nearly a must start, but that's the type of stuff we're looking for here early on, you know? So he's a guy that caught my attention just because it's a big change in what he's doing, and the production is following early on. Not elite production, but production. And there's a couple other, like, you know, we mentioned Oviedo. Oviedo's another guy where it's like his slider is 3 miles per hour faster, but then it was like a tighter movement. So it's almost not quite, I wouldn't say it's, like, I can't sit here and be like, I'm a pitching guru guy. So it's like, is it more like a cutter? But it profiles like, not like it's not like a huge sweeping slider, at least not the way the numbers are looking at it. So it's like he's throwing it harder, a little bit different movement on it, and he's utilizing it more. So Oviedo has that going for him. He has a little bit of change going on for him as well. And that was kind of what caught my attention there with that, with him mostly. And then, of course, the good outing and flashed some of that upside late last year, if memory serves. I know Simeon likes him a lot, too, as a late guy. And there's a few others, I'm sure. Obviously, Bubic has been talked about from everyone. Bryce Eller's been talked about from everyone.
We're going to talk about both of them in the Fab recap here. So yeah, we got plenty
of I'm just trying to think. Lizardo, I know he's not like a free agent or anything, but he's been absolutely amazing. He's looked as advertised. And if you drafted him where you got him, if he gives you 150 innings, and I feel like that's fair to ask. That's a 30 inning jump, I think, or might be. I think his career high was like 110, 120. I don't remember. But I think he can get to 130, 140, 150. And I think even at that, given how he's looked, if Lizardo carries what he's shown early on, through 130 to 150 innings, you're still going to get profit there. And I think he's been one of those guys that's like early returns, like, okay, this could be one of those guys that makes that jump from like where he's going, like, you know, like 30 in the 30s and 40s range of pitcher to like, he could be a top 15 guy next year. You know, he's in that, him and, you know, what, like Joe Ryan,
of the world,
Dolo. Yeah. Those guys can easily make that jump next year. It's like one of those things every year, there's a group of them. And he's kind of like one of those, like leading the group, him, Lodolo, Ashcraft has been beyond great value at this point. Yeah.
It's amazing what health can do.
And like players actually, you know, they people just give up on prospects. Look at Kelnick. Kelnick's another guy that even I was like, tonight. And he's turning pitches inside out. Kelnick's like we knew the tools were there. It's the fact he's making contact. And then I saw that strikeout rate early on. I'm like, oh man, he's doing it again. It was like 30-something%. But then when you go look at like the plate discipline, it didn't make sense that the strikeout rate was so bad because his swinging strike rate was under 10% for like the first time ever. I was like, wait a minute. And I'm like, and he's being more aggressive. I'm like, this profile doesn't make sense. How is he striking out so much? And I'm like, oh, and I saw his call strike rate was pretty high. So I meant to actually go dive into his two strike approach. Maybe he's just taking too many two strike pitches, but regardless, you know, obviously he seems to be figuring it out at least early on. It's too early to say he's figured it out. We're talking about a couple weeks here, but it's good to see encouraging signs. And that's what the point of this stuff is to kind of just make these notes, get this information in front of you and keep tabs on it. The Oscar Gonzalez thing, that's the one last one we'll talk about before we move on, is just that his playing time is weird. I don't understand what happened.
Yeah, big time.
I think he started 3 of 6 against righties or 2 of 6. It's the notes are somewhere, but
it was only one the first week of the season. So it might be like 2 of 6. I'm thinking like I wrote up a thing on him early on. It was not good.
I think tonight he sat for Brennan as well. That's why I know it's I'm looking it up right now, though. Oscar Gonzalez against righties, he has started 2 of 7. I don't think if he didn't start tonight, it's 2 of 7. But the weird thing was when you look at his splits from last year, Gonzalez actually had better splits against righties than lefties. He actually had like a 124 or 140, something crazy. WRC plus was like 20-something%, 30-something% better than league average, and he had like a really good OPS. It wasn't just like empty batting average. I don't understand why they wouldn't give the guy who performed so well last year overall and against righties more run. I know Will Brennan is a lefty. The platoon makes sense if you're trying to do that whole lefty-righty platoon thing, but I'm surprised they didn't give him any leash. And by him, I mean Oscar Gonzalez, obviously. And I like Will Brennan. So if you want somebody who could be decent, you know, batting average speed, good bat the ball skills, Will Brennan's a good name to know for sure in shallower formats.
Yep. Looking forward to the next dive you have there. Maybe throw Corbin Burns on there. He actually looked like Corbin Burns tonight. So I'm curious to see what changed over the first two starts to now. So, educate me, my friend.
He's Corbin Burns.
I know.
That's the analysis.
Yeah. I know. People are freaking out, but I was like, yeah, just relax. Relax.
I get it because it was the first, you know, the fact that it went back to the second half of last year. I understand there's lingering things, but it's almost like it reminded me a lot of Woodruff of last year. Remember Woodruff came in, struggled like crazy for like a month or so, and then had a huge, like, great finish of the year, and he was a second round pick again, or third round pick, wherever you got him. But I think Burns is gonna be it was too early to, I didn't get a lot of Burns anyway. I was on the Cole side of things anyway with that discussion, so anytime a pitcher followed me in the first round, I ended up getting Cole every time, so I can't even sit here and get mad. If Burns sucks, it's probably better for me in the long run anyway, but I think it's too early to worry about a lot of these guys.
100% on board with you on that one. All righty, everybody, let's talk week 2 NFBC Fab. We always talk OCs on the show, 12-team leagues, to get you ready and see if maybe they're available in your formats that you're drafting, to see if they are worth the money. And worst, the best part is the range in prices in OCs that just make you want to pull whatever hair you have left on your head out. The most added player in 392. No, that is it. All game styles. It reloaded on me just like it did to you, Cronin. The most added player in 170 leagues, as high as $194, as low as $1. This is a fun one. $194 for Brian Anderson, Mike Kirwan, for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's moving over to third base with a Luis Urias injury. I've written about Brian Anderson way too many times this week between fab columns and risers and fallers and whatever else you want to call it. I know too much about a man that I'd never want to draft. And he's playing great. I'll be honest with that. There are some holes I'm seeing with this situation. But what's your thoughts on Brian Anderson? Like, I see him filling roster spots just fine. Breaking the bank was silly. But are you in on a guy like Brian Anderson?
So Anderson just has a soft spot in my heart because I've been in on him for like 3 years now. Just as a Marlins fan, because I always thought he had something, like, always thought there was something there, untapped potential. Just the Brian Anderson was just always like a solid. He always had one of Brian Anderson always had a profile I really enjoyed. It was almost like his name was just boring and bland. It was such a solid, safe name, such a solid, safe profile that went with it. Injuries ate him up. That ballpark ate him up. And then you see him have a really good spring, and that carried over. And then, of course, he follows that up, you know, the strong week and a half, whatever week, with what, entering tonight, he actually went on a 0-for-11 run. Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no, if you include tonight, 0-for-14 now, since after that really hot streak. And I think there's a happy medium here, because I don't think he was as good as advertised, obviously, but I don't think he's actually, I think the problem is he's more 15 team relevant than 12 team is what we're getting at here. I understand chasing it, I really do, but not for the price that it costs. So or at least cost the one guy who spent like 20% of his fab on him. But I don't want to talk bad about people. I'm just being honest.
I do it tongue in cheek. It's complete sarcasm every time, because people have their reasoning for doing things. But one of my biggest hesitations on Brian Anderson, not just because, you know, a guy with like a 60% hard hit rate and, you know, 35% barrel is not sustainable, obviously, but the dude is striking out over 30% of the time as well. So he's got like a bunch of swing and miss going on there. When he puts the ball in play, it was thumping. There's a lot of things going on there that you're like, okay, regression's going to hit, and it's going to suck, but eventually it'll even out, like you said, and this is the guy we'll get. It'll be like a 250, 260, probably 260 hitter, give or take. You know, hit you maybe a home run or two every couple weeks. That's the dude. So more 15 team, like you said. It's just nice. He has that third base outfield eligibility, which is tremendous. That's a big plus.
I think it's good. In a 12, that could be useful as a bench piece. Like, obviously, in NFBC, where, like right now, if you had, like, for me, I had Max Kepler go down after that Monday game last week. So, for 3 days, I had to take a zero and then plug. I had an outfielder on my bench to plug in. Brian Anderson makes sense for the NFBC. And we're talking OC, so that's still NFBC formats. Yep. He makes sense to have as a bench piece for that purpose, to keep you from getting zeros. Because taking zeros, like a Brandon Woodruff for the week, really hurts.
Yep. Yes, it
does. I'm not hurting at all. I'm not in pain.
You look great. You look great.
I'm happy.
The second most added player in OCs this past week in 152 leagues, as high as 310, as low as $2. I'm always a fan of the ones that didn't go for a single dollar. That's fun. It is Francisco Alvarez of the New York Mets. He made his second start of the season on Tuesday night, went 0-for-4 with three more strikeouts. He now has 5 Ks in his first two games. He's got one hit to go with it. They're not playing him every day. They said that before the fab period happened, and no one believed it, apparently. Buck Showalter's old people, and this is what they do. They want Nito, his quote-unquote experience in defense, out there. He said it to the media, to the world, to hear, and people didn't believe him. So what's your thoughts on Alvarez, who I believe, if he played full-time, could be a top-10 catcher? But I don't know when we're going to get that.
So the good news is that he has two, you know, starts at catcher. He needs 8 more. And if the early indication in terms of the usage is meaningful, that is concerning. Because what, we're talking 3, maybe 4 starts in a week if you're lucky.
Yep.
So and like, you paid 2 to 3
more weeks before you get that eligibility.
That's what I'm getting at. Unless, you know, maybe like an extra inning game, he comes in off the bench and, you know, all he has to do is make an appearance. I'm pretty sure that counts, right? Like, just make an appearance. So he can sneak it in there. But with that said, I mean, people right now, you paid this price for him to sit on your bench for what, 2, maybe 3 weeks. And then Alvarez has what, maybe on the high end, if you're lucky, 6 more weeks before What's his face returns? So
Omar Narvaez.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, and obviously with them, it was the comments. The comments kept me off of them. I didn't bid this heavily on them. I understand it because, heck, I think I mentioned I'm rostering Jake Rogers in the league. That's to give you an idea of like how useful it would be to have a second catcher like a Francisco Alvarez. But I feel like I don't think Showalter was lying with how they planned to utilize him. And then he described it as like you draft a first round quarterback to sit him behind a starter for a year. Like they haven't done that since like the early 2000s. So that right there spoke to his mindset. I'm like, oh man, anybody referencing sitting a quarterback in the first round for the first year or two, like that really was like a 90s, early 2000s thing we saw. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm like, oh man, this Alvarez stuff, as much as I root for him, as much as I think he could be a difference maker, I don't know if the team's going to allow it. So I saved my fab, and I get it though. It makes sense to gamble on him. I really do think it does. I was concerned. It's weird because I was conservative, but I haven't really been in my leagues. I've just been more aggressive on, I guess, the lesser talented potential players as of right now.
No, I'm with you. Like that's why, like, I see the appeal. Like I said, he could be a top 10 catcher. I just don't know if they're going to play him enough to be a top 10 catcher. And that was where I'm just like, I'm out. I'm fortunate where I didn't really need a catcher anywhere either. Oh, so that made it a little easier. I know you said you had Jake Rogers. I get it. But that's what makes it tricky. Like I've seen non-NFC leagues, like Logan O'Hoppy still out there. Please go pick him up, people. Oh. Like, what are we doing? I think I wrote about him. He was still like only 40% rostered in Yahoo over the last week. I'm like, what are we doing? There's certain formats where you don't even need to really worry about Francisco Alvarez if you don't need to. Let's talk about the third most rostered player. This is a good one. Bryce Elder, 150 leagues, as high as 136, as low as a dollar before he got picked up this past week. Six shutout innings with six Ks against the Cardinals. He backed it up with six and a third shutout with seven Ks against the Reds. We've seen big boy stuff from Bryce Elder. The pitching staff for Atlanta, Dylan Dodd got sent down. Schuster's been bad. Kyle Wright returned, not great. Four runs, I think, in four innings, four walks, four hits. He's still kind of trying to figure it out, hopefully get some velocity going. We'll see. Max Fried is going to throw off a bullpen on Tuesday, so hopefully he can come back within a week or so. We'll see. So they need Elder right now. They might need him for a little bit longer than people think. So what's your thoughts on this Bryce Elder edition?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
I like it. I think it was a smart play. It was one of those things where if you were pivoting from like a Bubich type, like the big name again goes. I've mentioned that guy like 15 times on this podcast already because he was the hype machine that it was. But Elder was kind of overlooked in the process, and although he did, you know, garner some pretty decent sized bids in leagues, he wasn't the highlight. You know, he wasn't the main target for a lot of people. But what you're seeing with Elder is interesting because, you know, he is utilizing the slider more this year, like 15% more almost, give or take, while a little less sinker. So there's a little, what I'm getting at is there's a little bit of a pitch mix change going on already with him, reversing the slider usage, throwing it the most compared to the sinker last year. And with it, though, you're seeing Elder have a career best, again, we're talking two starts here, 12 innings, but the K-minus walk rate is showing early improvements, 19.6%. with a 28.3% K rate type of thing. So it's like he's really getting some decent strikeouts. It's the ground ball rate's 50%. So you like seeing that he's keeping it on the ground a lot as well. So when he is allowing contact, it's likely on the ground more at least 50% of the time is on the ground. But obviously there's some stuff like the strand rate's going to go up. It's 100%. You can't keep that. The ERA is zero. So, but even if you look at underlying metrics outside of XERA, if you look at FIP, XFIP, and Sierra, they all suggest he's a, well, one suggests he's a mid two ERA, but I would say that the 3.53 XFIP and the 3.6 Sierra for Elder are more likely. And I feel like, and those are still two of the higher end numbers here. Even if you regress to that, that's such a strong back end of your rotation type. And if some of the strikeout gains are legit here for Elder, then he's more than just an innings eater for you. So Elder has appeal. And there was, and again, there's a little bit of early changes going on in the pitch mix, which could be an indication or at least a reasoning as to why he's finding the success he is. Just something to keep in mind. Not saying again, where it's too early to say this is definitive and this is definitely happening, and there's definitely like a, you know, one for causation here, you know, and all that. But it is something that's like at least there's a little potential reasoning behind the success. Not to mention playing for the Braves, that win potential adds to his appeal for fantasy. So there's that.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Bryce Elder. I'd not get him anywhere because I'm always just too cautious in my bids at times. So people get a lot of guys that I probably should be more aggressive on. It's just something I'm working on. I'm trying to get better at it, but I like Bryce Elder a lot. He even pitched well in the postseason last year. We've seen it come through this year, and I think they're going to need him for a bit, like I kind of said earlier. So this is going to be an interesting addition. A player I did grab, I believe, we'll talk about our ad drops later, was the fourth most added player in OCs, Anthony DeSclafani, picked up in 146 leagues, as high as 155, as low as $4. He got some they put some respect on Disco's name. Honestly, with you mentioned Bubik, there's Elder. I was putting bids in for Disco thinking he'll be so overlooked, like no one's going to care about Disco in a 12-team league. I was wrong, apparently. He's pitched great over six innings in most start, one run total, seven Ks against KC, who's a place to stream against folks. They are horrible and strike out a ton right now. But Disco's looked really, really good to start out. We've seen these type of things happen with him, and then he, you know, gets tired or hurt and the wheels come off the bus type situation. But for now, I'm riding it out because the Giants have a weird thing going on with some of their other pitchers, with Manaea and some other guys. They're kind of doing like piggybacking. It was supposed to be with Disco, but Disco's pitched too good to make that happen. How are you foreseeing this Disco Flawney thing?
So, you know me, and people who follow my work at all know I have always been a sucker for Anthony DeSclafani. One of my first articles I ever wrote in terms of like just somebody I'm watching that game too. I saw the home run. I just didn't see who we are,
baby.
Oh, that was another guy that I actually was in on, but not bid enough to get.
I wrote him up in the NFBC deep waiver wires. He has a very, very promising schedule coming up, folks. Two juicy lefties in Detroit this weekend. Enjoy.
Yeah, not to mention he's just like he's been part of this whole. That kind of caught me off guard, the fact that he's batting in the middle of the lineup. But I guess they kind of need some righty bats in the middle of that lineup. They can't have all the lefties. Power.
Yeah, but sorry.
Oh, back to back. Sorry.
This is glorious.
Anyway,
Giants are opening up a whoop-ass on the good old Dodgers. So have fun with that. Brandon Crawford, days of the past. Sorry. Yes, DeSclafani.
Is this all happening against this is Phillips, not even May anymore.
Yeah. Non-safe situation. Enjoy, folks.
Don't you love that? Anyway, so Tony Disco, always been a fan, huge fan. One of my first ever write-ups of a starting pitcher, like a deep dive article. If I go back and find it on FanGraphs, FanTrax. Yeah, I never wrote for FanGraphs. They denied me. it worked out all right, but yes, they denied me. What was I saying? So anyway, with Tony Disco, think about him early on. he's just like Manaea, you're seeing some velo increase. You're seeing the sinker up a mile, 1.1 miles per hour. The changeup is also up. Well, secondaries, changeup, like a secondary being up isn't always a good thing or doesn't always matter. But with it being up, there was a change in some of the movement on it, I believe. That's what caught my attention with it. Yeah, so with his changeup, he's getting less horizontal movement and more vertical movement, I believe. Yeah, a little bit, like 2 more inches of vertical drop and less sweeping motion. It's weird. It's so he's throwing it harder and getting a different movement profile on it, which kind of just, again, just found that interesting. And then of course the pitch mix change for Tony Disco. He's throwing the slider more, the sinker more, and the changeup a lot more, while cutting that fast, the four seam fastball use by nearly 10%, and the curveball dropping it off like almost 9%. So again, he's focusing more on a three pitch mix, throwing at least all three at 16% of the time or greater. Meanwhile, last year, Tony Disco threw 4 pitches at least 13% of the time. So he's kind of like refining it, just like, because he's always been a guy, Disco's always been a guy with like 4 or 5 pitches he could throw and tinkers with a sinker. He added a sinker a few years back, and that's fast. The four seamer was never really a good pitch. And last year, it really wasn't good either with a 1,444 slug on it. But it's one of those things where he's getting away from it, thankfully. And he's leaning more into that slider, sinker, changeup combo, and he's finding. He's getting whiffs with the changeup. That something about changeups there in San Fran right now, because I don't know if you noticed just how wicked what's his face has been, Webb, which Webb always had a good changeup.
Yep. Don't get me started on this, because I was banging the drum all preseason for Webb, and it's coming true.
Webb's getting those strikeouts again. That's one thing I should mention as one of those takeaways. Webb's getting the strikeouts again. Now he has been prone to the long ball. That's been the only issue though.
Yeah, 30% home run to fly ball. They're like, that ain't sustaining either.
But the changeup had like, it was like a 62% whiff rate. I think it was like a swing in like the 30% range, and like a swing strike rate in the mid-20s. Like, it was stupid, the numbers that came from it when I looked at it today. And I'm like, he has that pitch. And I remember when Webb came up, he had that. He had a really good changeup. So I looked, and that changeup does profile closer to the 2020, 2019, whenever he came up, the rookie year, that when he had that good year, 2021, whatever it was. So it was interesting to see that. So I think they're doing something there with changeups. And, you know, you saw Miami with the changeups too. So it's like, changeups are a thing. And if you look at the, you know, again, I'm getting really really into it right now and really, really diving into the nitty gritty. But my point was with Disco is that I think there's more to it than just a hot streak. I think there's something here, at least to be relevant moving forward. And we almost got, I forgot we were podcasting here for a second, but I really did. I'm just talking baseball with you for a second here about Giants pitching. So I apologize if you listeners, like if I lost you, I do apologize. I get to talking about this stuff and I forget that me and Bubba, we do this all the time. So
No, it's awesome. That's what I love. Like, this is what I love talking with Kerwin, folks, a wealth of knowledge, and it goes all over the place. So buckle up and be ready.
It's a roller coaster of emotion.
I love it. The next most added player in 133 leagues. This is sit back as high as $437, as low as $3. I'm okay with adding this individual. I'm going to say that much. I always say I want names so they can come on and I just want a whole episode of like, speak your reasoning. Speak your logic for $437 for Miles Straw. I would love to know. He's hitting for average to start the season. He's stealing bags. He's doing everything we wanted last season when you picked him in like the third round. He's doing it all right now. And I brought it up, I think, in my Cleveland season preview and then other shows in draft season, like, hey, he's almost free. Why are we not taking a chance on a free Miles Straw, who, even if he's half the guy we hoped he would be last year, that's a pretty good free pick. Like, we could live with that. Probably not super sustainable, but he's walking 19.6%, striking out 19.6. He's doing all the things we want to see from him, and this Cleveland offense is pretty darn good right now. So I'm okay with the pickup. I'm not so okay with 437, but I'm okay with the pickup. So what's your thoughts on Miles Straw?
I think you nailed it. Miles Straw, we were laughing. We have a good laugh. Big John Legaza, Big John Stud, was a Straw guy last year. And it's just funny because I'm looking at his stuff right now and it's like, you're right. And that's kind of what we're laughing at. Not laughing at John. We're laughing at John because it's at his expense, obviously, because we love John. But he was big on Straw last year, and Straw's doing everything he wanted him to do last year, this year. Because Straw has this profile. He doesn't strike out a ton. He walks, and usually with walks come stolen bases from him. He's batting ninth though. So right there, that limits his runs in RBI. Although he has been, 7 runs isn't bad from a 9-spot hitter right now, this part of the season. That won't, again, but it won't really, he's not going to have a whole lot of runs being at batting ninth. But could he move up? Maybe. I don't know. It's a really tough lineup to move up in. Anyway, the stolen bases are there. We know that. Even with the ball traveling better, you're still looking at a guy who's now, between last year and this year, over 600 plate appearances without a home run. So pretty much a zero for power. He is what he is. I think it's wild to see him kind of being who we hoped he'd be last year. But that's just, there's nothing really changed here. Still grounding, still so many ground balls, still not pulling. It's Miles Straw. I don't know. He's going to be stolen. It feels rather empty, you know, batting average and stolen bases. But in a 12, I'm surprised the price was so high for him. But I do understand, because he pretty much, I feel like maybe people thought of him as this year's John Birdie, even though John Birdie could be this year's John Birdie. But John, you know,
Birdie,
what I mean? Like,
John Birdie took Aaron Nola deep tonight. So
Birdie. Well, this is the, you know, they're not testing for steroids, right? John Birdie juicing. You heard it here first, buddy. John Birdie's on the juice. You heard it here first. Yeah.
All right, a couple more. I'm a cherry pick. We're not going to go straight down the list anymore, but some names that I want to bring up because they'll probably be available in a lot of people's non-NFBC leagues, so this could be some interest. Chaz McCormick was picked up in 122 leagues, as high as 141, as low as a dollar. He's hit significantly in all but two games this year, only 250 at average, but you know, two homers, three stolen bases, and the big thing is he's leading off the last four games now if you count tonight. And that's big. I know. I believe you mentioned this on your show on Tuesday, actually. It was about how Jeremy Pena signed off on it. Because that's what I was wondering. I didn't know that part. I'm like, what in the world is going on? Like, Pena and Tucker were going 1-2 for a second. I'm like, the gods are shining down on me, finally. And now McCormick out of everything. And if you haven't seen his NFBC picture, folks, please go find it. It's a dude in glasses in a suit. It's like a fraternity picture. He's on the wall in a fraternity hall. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on this Chaz McCormick thing? Obviously, as people heal up and injuries, you know, disappear for the Astros, he'll probably fade in the light. But for now, he's here.
So, yeah, Chaz McCormick, I chased it last year. I was just a year early. I didn't expect him to be this year either. But, yeah, you see what you're seeing is what you're getting. I think this is kind of somewhat legitimate. I mean, the walks are there. We know the walk rate for McCormick is, you know, something he's done 2 years in a row now. Strikeouts are a little bit of a concern. But if he's walking at double digit clip and keeping the on base skills even close to whatever, I mean, it's a 361 OBP. He's never done that at the major league level, so I think it's more of a hot streak, obviously. But I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a WRC plus of 114 last year, WRC plus of 108. So he's always been an above average player. I don't see why that, if he can keep up the double digit walk rate, while he won't get a good amount of leash at the leadoff spot. The issue is here that Dusty likes to play these games. Like, I think McCormick sat like two out of the first three, or the first two games of the season before getting some run. It was weird. He does this. He randomly just runs with people that are not the big names. Like, if it's a big name, he lets them, that he plays them in their 5 or 6 games a week, whatever. But anybody beyond that, it's like insert name here for a couple games. All right, two games here for Myers, two games here for McCormick. And that's what had me off of anybody not in the top 6 or 7 of that lineup, just because that's how Dusty's been treating him last year or so. At least last year was like that. It was crazy. And even early on this year, you saw Hensley. I think we mentioned it with Hensley, Dubon. Those guys, like, you'll see Hensley get run. Then Dubon's on right now. Dubon's getting the run. So that's what kept. But yeah, McCormick's getting all the run. And yes, I believe it was a thing where Dusty talked to Pena about it, and they were all in agreement. And I think Pena wanted to move down. Maybe he felt more comfortable hitting towards the bottom or not setting the table. I don't know. Either way, Chaz is here to stay as a leadoff guy, all things considered. And again, it goes back to the three stone bases, the two home runs. He's doing what you're
producing.
He's producing, and he's getting plate appearances. And he's getting plate appearances in one of the best lineups in baseball, even with the injuries. Chaz McCormick, leadoff hitter. You want that. As long as he's doing it, just ride it. And when he starts sucking, drop him, because that's what
he's an easy drop. He's a very easy drop when things go south. I like players like that. It makes my life so much easier. Trevor Larnach was added in 115 leagues, as high as 200, as low as a dollar. He's been hitting first, second, third almost every game, sometimes fourth for the Twins. I just want to get your thoughts on him, though. He's hitting 308 coming into today's action. Double, I mean, he's got a home run and a triple, no stolen bases, and he strikes out over 30% of the time. So it's like he's doing some things really well, but there's still a lot of things left to be desired, I guess. So are you in or out? What's your thoughts on Larnach?
Larnach, I'm pretty in on him, just because, again, the cost to acquire prior to this week would have been a lot cheaper, and has been rather cheap. And it's tough with him in shallower formats because you mentioned it's kind of right now he does have a 308 batting average, but it's with a 458 BABIP. So if you want to just look at something as simple as that, you realize there's regression due there. You mentioned 30% walk rate, but also a 30% strikeout rate for Larnick, but a 15% walk rate. So what, 45% of the time it's a walk or a strikeout for him. He's pretty much a three true outcomes guy. It feels like he's like, and then you go look at the, if you look at the underlying numbers, you notice for Larnick, it's not really a lack of contact issue. Yeah, he's a little worse than league average with swing strike rate, but his O swing is like almost, it's like 9 points better than league average. His contact rates are lower than average, but he's swinging 10% or 9% less than league average. So it's a passivity thing. It's not necessarily a bad eye, which is, I think that's always encouraging because people just see strikeout rate and think that the guy swinging out of his shoes and can't hit. Partially, but not as much as you might think, especially considering Larnick's ability to, you know, identify balls outside the zone and stuff. He's never been a guy who chases. He has had some swing and miss and swing strike issues, but I think it's just, again, I think it's more of a passivity thing. So the strikeouts, you're going to have to learn to live with them. Batting average won't be a strength, but we're talking about a guy who legitimately has like big time power upside. He is going to be a guy, though, I think, in shallow formats where you'll find yourself benching him, especially when as players return. If he doesn't pick it up and or even continue producing, Larnick's going to be a guy who slides down that lineup, who might start platooning again or even lose playing time as this team gets healthy. Because what, they have Gallo coming back that's going to come off the aisle eventually. Kepler, Polanco is going to come back, which pushes Nick Gordon into the mix.
Kirilloff just started a rehab assignment today.
Kirilloff's going to go to first base, which puts Gallo back into the outfield. Michael A. Taylor, who has a really good glove, they might value that. I don't know how long. That's why I'm saying it could be. I think Larnick's going to be given every opportunity to succeed, especially right now when there is literally nothing stopping him from playing every day. But if Larnick can't take advantage of that, then I think the leash will be short as they get healthy. So that's where you got to watch it. Short term, in the immediate future, I do like what we're seeing here. I do think there's upside, but be aware that there's also there's a reason why. There's a reason why he hasn't really been fantasy relevant. And since, you know, wasn't he a former top prospect too at one point?
Yeah, he was one of the top picks at Oregon State the same year as like Nick Madrigal. Yeah, they were teammates at Oregon State. So,
yeah, those guys have worked out great.
Yep, they've been phenomenal. Pac-12, baby. All right, the last individual I'm going to ask about tonight, there's a bunch of them. Like, it's an interesting pool in 12 teamers, but I have to get the opinion of one Mike Curlin on Chris Bubich, everybody. Picked up in 108 leagues, as high as 137, as low as a dollar. He's looked really good in both starts, sliced and diced the Giants in his last outing. I've seen some very smart pitching people just talk about his mechanics, his pitch mix. Like, there's a lot of things that stand out. What are you seeing when you dig in, and are you buying into this? Because the hardest thing for me is with a lot of these Royals young pitchers, you hear all the pedigree coming through the minors, like, okay, I'm in. He comes up and just completely destroys your team. He's done it a few times. So it's like, I need to see more of this, and it's going to be too late because by then he'll be gone everywhere. So how are you looking at Chris Bubich?
So I look at Bubich I feel like he's a little bit of a lottery ticket in deeper formats. I was a little aggressive on him. I got him for a nice, very nice bid of 69 even.
Nice.
In my main, cause I'm a giant child. Of course I had to bid that and I won. So I'm happy. But cause they had the fact that his name is Bubich. And yep. So kind of just immaturity.
A little secret. You want immaturity. Myself and Joe Pisapia, we were doing a DFS show the first year Bubich came up, and we didn't know how to pronounce his name because he just got called up. And it turned into about a 30 to 45 second Chris Bubich. Like, it was just like 2-year-olds on the microphone. we got paid for that. So, yeah, pretty fun stuff.
That's always fun. Hey, yeah. If you can get paid to be – I mean, I do it for free. So, yeah, if I can get paid to be a fool, it's great. Yeah. But, it's one of those things where I'm looking at him. And, again, it goes back to – you see guys like Lance. I see Lance Notes. I'm trying to remember his last name. Smarter, way smarter dude than me when it comes to pitching.
Lance Brozdowski. That's how I learned about the Bubich thing. A couple of things. First, I want to shout out Lance. I remember Lance when he first started like basically doing any content period for fantasy and regular baseball. Guy has always been a genius. If you go way back in the archives of this show, he's been on a couple of times. But now he's like on the marquee network for the Cubs. He was in the booth tonight. They have a special, like, is their version of like a StatCast show on the side. He was doing that. He did some spring training games. And I know where Curlin's going. Like, I have my alerts on because he every morning tweets out like kind of things on starting pitchers. And I'm not a starting pitching guy, but I'm trying. Like, that's one of my weaknesses that I've said forever. I'm trying to learn it. his little nuggets help a ton. So sorry if I took your thunder, but where were you going with that?
No. Oh, exactly where I was going with it. Like, that's where I kind of like almost
it opened my eyes to him in a big way.
It was one of those things where he's kind of like an authority compared to like me. Like, that's kind of why I started doing these savant breakdowns, because like I know what's there, I know what things mean, but I never took the effort or time to put it in and learn it myself. So I made a point to this offseason and more so monitor it. I learned it, just monitoring it was a thing for me. So, but yeah, so I saw his take on it. I'm like, oh, okay. So I did, you know, I start digging. I'm like, okay, it makes sense. I mean, not only is he right, obviously, but it was like one of those things where it's okay, it's eye opening. But then I believe, and then there was an article that discussed how Bubic was like he made all these changes in the off season. And I think, was it Kev of all people that like, I hate to give Kev any credit, 'cause it's Kev, but, at Rotosurgeon, but I think it was him
he won't be listening.
No, it's fine. No, I just like to give him a hard time. But I think it was him. I saw him tweet, and I must have missed this, but they have a couple Rays guys in their front office now or in their development team or something.
That would make sense if that's the case.
And if that's true, I forgot what he – I was excited. You know, stuff like that matters in the offseason. That's why I was telling you I need to make sure I need to just follow everything in the offseason, because I feel like something like that, we wouldn't have overlooked that. That would have actually kept our eyes on a guy like this, because, like, wait, they got a couple Rays guys in their organization now? Wait, they're pitchers, and they have these high prospect pitchers? Maybe there's a thing, because you know Brad Keller's getting hyped too. Brad Keller's another name that's kind of picking up steam for them, just because he's making some interesting changes, if you want to call it. Like, I think for the writer for the Patreon, I'm like, Brad Keller is interesting ? Like there was some stuff there. Like, I think he's doing some new stuff too. So I'm like, huh, they're doing something there in KC. I'm not saying it's gonna be great or fantastic or anything, but what it is doing is open my eyes. So yeah, I saw, and then again, it goes back to Lance's notes and all that. I'm like, all right, I'm going to trust in that more so than anything. And obviously I can go back and I could look at it myself, but I'm like, I think he had a pretty soft matchup last week too, if memory serves. This week against the Braves is going to be a good matchup.
No, he faced Toronto his first start.
It was the first start, but the second start, he had an easy one. So it was like
the Giants. He crushed the Giants. Yeah.
And the problem with the Giants is they've been very literally home run or bust. Like, they've been selling out.
Yeah, I call them Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes.
Like, it's all or nothing with them right now.
And that's the thing. So I'm like, so it's one of those things where it's a small sample. You get a team seeing a brand new version of you the first time of the year. Yeah, that's, you know, that's not really fair. The Blue Jays didn't have a chance to adjust yet. Teams are going to start adjusting. This is where it gets interesting. This third start against a team that's hot like the Braves, if you can go in there and even give up like six innings, three earned runs, I'm even that much more in. So he's a guy that, like, you can't wait and see with how fantasy is these days in most leagues. So he's a guy that I definitely went out of my way to make sure to acquire, because I think in a deeper format, he has the potential to be at least difference making in the fact that he could be good in all categories but wins and really give you a boost off the bench. Meanwhile, in shallower formats, he could be a guy that you pick up the stream, realize, oh, he's really good. Now you're streaming him off your bench for matchups or two starts. And he has a potential to be a guy that you're kind of like set and forget type. And I think it's hard to identify those guys this early, but I think Bubic has that type of potential. But at the end of the day, it's still a Royals pitcher, and I'm always skeptical.
Yeah, that was my problem. Like, it could happen, but as a combination,
we got him. Like, we got him in our little league we did together.
Yeah, in our OCQ, that's fine. But like, it's in my OC, I know. Kind of like, I'm sitting there, it's like,
you've seen the bids so many, vary too.
Yeah, they vary a ton. So that's the fun. Speaking of bids, let's recap our fab from week two before we get into some listener questions here. So, if you got yours up, the floor is yours. If not, I'm ready to rock and roll if you need me to. So let me know, my friend.
I'm pulling them up. Here we go.
Perfect.
I got them. So I'll start. I have one Fab League. It's my main event. I purposely made it that way this year. I was not doing any other Fab League because I wanted to give all my effort to a main event this year. And my first big pick was 69 to 58, so it was a decent bid. It was my Chris Bubic pick, which we talked about, so you can go next. I don't need to elaborate anymore on that.
Nice. You have one pick? That's it?
No, I have multiple. Oh, you want me to go? No, I wasn't sure we were alternating. Okay.
I'll go through all of them.
The second one was Braxton Garrett. Dropped Cutter Crawford. Cutter Crawford gave me a decent finish to that two-step. Started off bad. But 29
to 20. He's got him to AAA, so that worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah. I did overbid 29 to 8. Because in a 15-teamer, I look at Braxton Garrett, and I'll just discuss it real quick. I think we saw last year kind of that floor. He's kind of that solid back into your rotation type, a guy you plug in. I actually streamed him this week over Bubic. and I actually spent more on Bubic. I have Bubic on my bench because of the Braves matchup scares me. So I put Braxton Garrett in because I know he's going to make at least one more start. But my big thing, the reason why I went a little more aggressive on him is I do think he's going to stick to this lineup because I do think if somebody gets sent down, it's going to be Cabrera, especially if Cabrera goes. I think he's pitching tomorrow. If he goes out tomorrow and walks the yard again, there's no reason why they're going to keep him up. He has been so bad with the control, hasn't been able to get anything going. Garrett was fighting with him and Trevor Rogers for a final spot. Now Garrett and Cabrera have one option left each. So one of them is getting optioned and going to probably stay down for a little bit. And I think the safer option would be to, you know, get Cabrera more reps in the minors. This is my two cents on the situation. So that's
I'm a big Garrett fan. I know Bloomfield is like, we've preached about him. Yeah, if you just want to talk safe. About, yeah, if you just want to talk about better pitcher for now, it should be Garrett on paper.
Yeah, I just don't know how the Marlins are going to treat it because, again, Cabrera, it's more so if Cabrera goes out tomorrow and doesn't walk everyone, I think then there's more of a discussion. But if Cabrera goes out tomorrow and walks five again or walks four, has really bad control, I think there's a really strong chance he's the one that gets sent down when Cueto returns, which I don't know why Cueto's getting in the way of any of these guys pitching, but I don't make these decisions as much as I wish I did. And then one guy I specced on, I was a little aggressive, and I think I got scared. So I a little bit of wasted fab here. Don't do what I did. Trevor Stephan, I believe it is how you pronounce it, Stephan, for the Guardians. And a lot of it goes back to, even though, what's his face, Emmanuel Clase looked really good the other night, his velo was still down. The fact his velo is down like 1 to 2 miles per hour most nights, I think a couple nights, now the weather could be playing a part in this. But we're talking the velo down 1 to 2+ miles per hour across the board for Class A. We're talking about bad control. And this was after starting the year, the second night he started, he pitched. Class A had really good velocity and really good stuff. And then from there, it was like two straight starts of like really bad velo and got his velo back up a little bit. Then velo boom back down, really bad control. I'm like, so I took a shot. I think I'm going to end up dropping him this week, but 19-5. So I really that's where it's like, oh, I shouldn't have been that high, but I really wanted to get that spec. But, you know, Estevez got saved tonight. Made me feel a little happier because I have Estevez on this team. Jake Rogers swapped out. And the last two were I swapped out Jake Rogers for Campusano. Needed a catcher to get some more play appearances. And Connor Capel, because Seth Brown went down with an injury that day. And now it sounds like it's a grade 2 oblique. So Capel's going to get some run on the strong side of a platoon. A little bit of batting average, a little bit of speed there, and he stole base for me tonight. So I started him this week for the over. Who did I start him over? Nick Gordon. The matchups for Capel were actually better on paper. Dropped Will Benson of all people, a guy who was like a big upside guy. I took so those are my ad drops for the week. I like him. I'm happy with him.
Yeah, I like it. Great loss.
It's a 15 teamer, by the way, for people who are interested.
Main event. I go through my three OCs as always. First off, in my first OC league, I didn't add him, but Mitch Keller went for $121. Ooh. Runner up of 31. They really wanted that two step, but he's actually looked decent.
He
looked pretty good though. So I'm gonna let that one slide for now. But I like him. I wouldn't have spent that kind of money. So my ads, I added Kyle Gibson. I dropped Sir Anthony Dominguez because I'm just pretty sure I don't know what's going on in Philadelphia. But a 12 team, I'll take the chance there. Kyle, and Curly, I don't know if you listened last week, but I think I had all of my bids go unopposed last week in all three leagues. This is 12s in a nutshell for you. So Kyle Gibson drops for Anthony, $13, no opposition bid. I added Dre Jameson because I'm a huge Dre believer in Jay Jameson. I hope he gets a run here. Drop Jared Schuster because he stinks. 12-0, no runner up. And then I added Alec Burleson because of the Coors start to the week with Newt Barr out until at least the second half of the week, if not the whole week. Dropped Dylan Dodd, $9, $4 runner-up bid. So I got one runner-up bid in that deal, but again, not breaking the bank. OC2, we had Andrew Chafin went for 122 in this league, which might actually pay off the way things are going. So
didn't he just got a save the other night, right?
He's got a second save, yeah. That one can be good. So in this league, I got Alec Burleson, dropped Brandon Belt, $9, no opposed. Added Jose Alvarado, dropped Johan Oviedo, who I only wanted for the two-step, $7 winning bid opposed to $5. So people did like Alvarado. And then I got David Villar, dropped Jared Schuster, $6, no backup bid. Told you, I practice what I preach with VR, folks. I'm a big fan of what we got going there. And then in OC3, Alec Burleson, this one was fun, dropped Avi Garcia, which hurt to do. But in a 12-team, he's a drop. $16, $15 runner-up bid, so that one was nice, very nice. David Villar dropped Danny Jimenez, 13-0 because I really needed a third baseman. So I went, and he wasn't even my first option. So that's where we went there. Yeah, that's about it. No one really probably cares about my barf league or my other leagues, but I got Alec Burleson pretty much everywhere. Let's just put it that way. That was kind of the gist of the situation. And he's a guy that I have zero problem dropping next week. That's the beauty of it. That's why I didn't break the bank. Came with the team, did our damage. We go home. That's the beauty of streaming certain positions.
Now I got to ask you about 12s real quick. I know we're running long. I apologize, but I'm curious. First off, why do you prefer? I actually wrote this on the sheet and I took it off because I wanted to just get your honest opinion real quick. I want you to prep. Why do you prefer 12s? Will be the first question.
Oh, it's a combination of I like to have fun when I play fantasy baseball, and so I like to have I like to have options available on the waiver wire when I'm going to make moves type thing, because that does not exist at a 15.
That's not true. We have Jose Barrero.
Yeah, I rest my case. I also like to the other part of the fun factor is I like having a team that looks like it can compete instead of like, oh god, can Jose Barrero actually do this for us type situation.
Hey, you don't want to start Connor Capel, and every time you see stolen base, it's like, oh, so rewarding. Come on.
Like in a 15, if you had O'Neill Cruz in a 15, it crushes your team, like destroys your team.
Not when a third of the 12, teams lost their shortstops.
in a 12, you can work around it type situation. Where in a 15, you're just gutted, and that makes it challenging. Some people might just say I'm being lazy. That's an option too. I just like to have fun. I like to be able to make moves and like feel comfortable instead of just like dirty about it. Like I just want to enjoy fantasy baseball without having to like, you know, I've done stuff with Toby for so long, and hearing the amount of work and time he puts in, and I'm seeing what you're doing with yours, and you just have one league. He had like way too many. I don't have that time. I just don't right now. So 12s works a lot better for my wheelhouse.
Oh, it's all good. It's all about preference. I'm not here to judge you for being lazy. I mean, for your preference, but in all seriousness, I was just curious because I don't think I've ever had this discussion with you because for me, it's the other way around. I enjoy the 15s because I look at them as a challenging aspect to try to find, get those diamonds out of the rough.
You want to outgrind the others to win.
Well, because I'm putting all this work into the content, I realized why am I not taking advantage of what I feel like should be a strength. That's why I went pitching heavy. That's why I continued to fad pitching aggressively and picking up a $6 unimposed Connor Capel. And like, I'm stressing that because obviously that's not a great name as much as I like him. Like Will Brennan went for $8 unimposed. I wish I actually was more aggressive on Will Brennan. I didn't quite buy the playing time yet. So me being the playing time guy, I missed out on a guy that I actually like more. I like Will Brennan more than Capel. And I missed out because I didn't quite buy it on Sunday night. And now I'm realizing maybe I should have bought it. But yeah, so it's one of those things where I enjoy this game. I enjoy these little like, all right, cool. This is happening. And
it's to each their own. I guess the bottom line, like I've always said forever. And like the ITL boys, Bogman and Welsh are great at it. This is supposed to be fun. So pick whichever format is fun for you.
Yeah.
Like whatever you want. So yeah,
I agree.
No, it's a great question. And it's why I like 12s. And that's why I like talking with people that do 15s. Cause it brings all the different angles to the table. And then you have Simeone, who's just lazy.
That's what that is. You give me a bit that 12 team where we do have, cause we had fun I keep mentioning a league between me and Bubba, but it's me, Bubba, George and Simeone. We all drafted together and it's starting off well, but it's an OCQ. So it's OC qualifier. So it's a 12 team league. And I'm over here every Sunday with like serious anxiety.
Don't feel sorry for it first. Sign up for it until he said he would run the fab. That was part of the deal. And he's already hating it after 2 weeks.
I don't mind running the fab. I get anxiety because there's so many good options out there. And then I told you, I overvalue players that I shouldn't have. I value players that I shouldn't value in 12. That's my issue. So I have a hard time separating the two. So because I have a hard time separating the two, I don't want to play the two. And now that I don't want to play them, I'm enjoying it. But it's just, I'm over here like, why is this guy only $10 here? Why is it? But wait, I see the OC bids and I realize that there's no rhyme or reason. You just have to kind of watch your league and
just wing it. Just wing it.
It's ridiculous.
The wild, wild west is what I call it.
It's amazing.
There's no rhyme or reason majority of the time. Sometimes, sure, you could probably make a good argument for it, but most of the time, like Mitch Keller, I love the guy. Like I draft him in deeper leagues, but $121 from it. Like, are we really doing this? Like, who is the guy? Was it Miles Straw? I said went for $437. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. people. Like, come on, you can have him at 437. Knock yourself out.
But then, if he's smart with his fab, he can get like he can go like $1 players all the way through and probably get really good streaming options the rest of the season.
You can make it worth
$1, which is wild. Which is so wild to me. I enjoy that aspect of it, but it blows my mind. And just the idea of it. Look, you see me getting worked up because it gives me anxiety. It gives me legitimate anxiety to sit there and manage a 12 teamer. That's why I'm like, how do you do this? How do you do this and enjoy it? There's nothing enjoyable about this. I overthink everything. Everything in general. And now you're giving me more options. That's part of the problem. Yeah. Well, and now you're giving me more options. Yeah. Thanks.
You're welcome. Right. A couple listener questions before we head on out of here. Dave Petroziella, regular listener of the show, and good enough PC player in his own right. With all the Bubich hype and to a lesser extent Ashcraft, my boy Oviedo has kind of slipped under the radar. We have a bit of decent sleeper with him. I think we kind of both think so. I kind of already regret dropping him, but it was a 12-team situation where I could probably go get him for cheap again next week or whatever. But, you know, you're a deeper format guy. Dave plays 12s and 15s. What's your thoughts on Oviedo, like, long-term, I guess?
I view him with a little bit more ceiling than a Braxton Garrett. I feel like he's kind of in that conversation of just that back end of your rotation type of guy with a little more upside to be better. Maybe SP4 for you, SP5. Because SP4, SP5 is actually a good starting pitcher in a 15. I'm not sure. Like it's also the team context, right? So Oviedo playing for the Pirates, you're not getting a whole lot of wins there, and that's kind of a big deal for fantasy. The ballpark should play to his strengths though, so it helps him. And again, we mentioned some changes in the pitch mix, but I don't know. I mean, there's a path for, like, right now he's a 3.18 ERA, but he can easily be a 4 ERA guy, and he's not striking out a whole lot of guys. He's never been a big strikeout guy outside of a few flashes here and there. I think Braxton Garrett is a fair comp in terms of like expectations, bad team context. He's not a negative in ratios and he's not a strength in strikeouts. Like, it's not a bad guy. I think there's maybe more upside for strikeouts than I give him credit for, but I don't know. I think he's just kind of solid, safe in those deeper formats. He actually he didn't get picked up in our league last week.
12 teamers, so, baby. You're welcome.
No, our league, or I meant, sorry, our league and my main event. I don't think he didn't get. I think he's still available. Which again, he becomes more intriguing when a guy like Woodruff goes down, and I'm over here like, oh, do I need a pitcher?
He can be a fill-in for sure.
And that's what I'm getting. And he's very matchup dependent. That's why he's in that streamer category. I think for both formats. I think the only difference is in a 15, you would try to stream him from your bench because there is a little room. There's a little potential for popping, and that type of stuff will keep a player on your bench longer than a 12, where like what you did dropping them makes sense. I get there's upside, but I don't know if there's gonna be enough upside for staying power in 12s.
Yeah, he's a guy that in 12s there's a lot of guys you'll see you could add drop throughout the entire season. Yeah. And it works out. Like, you literally have the roster spot for like four guys, you just rotate around and see what happens, and he's one of those for now. Maybe I'll regret it, but for now I'm totally cool with it. Yeah. Next question we have here is from at @JohnRussell215. Brent Honeywell, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Ronaldo Lopez. Who has the best end of season numbers and saves holds leagues? I would have told you this before the season started. It's Ronaldo Lopez.
Yep. I don't think there's much debate there between the two of us.
Yeah, the dude's pretty legit. And yeah, I would go that route. Now, and then I'd have Sir Anthony over Honeywell. As great as a story as Honeywell is, but that's kind of where I sit on that one.
Well, I want to root for Honeywell, so I'm going to say Honeywell, just because I've been chasing that dream for like 3 years in DCs, and he always ends up with a season-ending injury. So the one year I have like none, I think I have one share, he's going to pitch all year and be an amazing middle reliever. And
the sack at @StickinBall0 says, guesses on when Brendan Fott is up. I don't know, man. It's Dre Jamerson season for now, but maybe a month. It just depends on when the next injury comes down, I guess.
I wonder when his Super 2 date is or whatever that is. I've seen some dates like in early June for a lot of guys, so I could see that being the worst-case scenario. But I feel like a May call-up makes too much sense for him. Like, what else is it? As long as he keeps performing, of course. I know he had a kind of a rough first outing. Second outing was better. But Zach Davies is down. You have Mad Bum, who's just terrible.
He needs to get taken out back. That's what he needs. If you're a Yellowstone fan, he needs to go take a ride on the train. That's what he needs.
Taking out back. I knew. I caught that first reference. I actually need to watch Yellowstone. My wife and I have it on the to-do list. But so good. It's baseball season.
Oh, yeah. You don't get much done right now. No, you're done.
I mean, I might get a divorce out of it. I mean, what?
Seriously. Call me. Like, I said, call me.
You might know, someone can help me.
Yeah. We got one last question here at Dap Scout. This is a fun one because he's tweeted this out to us about an hour before the Woodruff news came down. Since I have great luck at jinxing whoever I pick up, which player should I target to ruin it for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so I gave him, as I said, I blame him for Woodruff because I figured, you know, if he could probably trade for Woodruff or something. Well, too late now. So now we got to give him a player. Let's see. Who's a player I have none of that everyone really likes? I mean, who can he add? I'm trying to think, are we talking trade here or add?
Dylan Cease.
There you go. I have no Dylan Cease. So if you want to go for Dylan Cease, or how about let's go Garrett Cole. Okay, I have too much Garrett Cole.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that to myself. I'm not, here's the
Alcantara.
Well, he already Sandy already made enemies today. So and plus,
I'm a fan.
Jesus Lizardo is the true ace of that team anyway. Yep. I'm gonna live by that one. I love Lizardo. Yeah.
No, there's a lot of them. I just don't want to wish ill will because yeah. we've avoided a lot of injuries so far. And if we start picking the next guy, then our team's about to get destroyed. It's just how karma works. So I'm gonna stay away from that one.
No, yeah, you're right.
But we're gonna wrap it up there, my friend. So any final thoughts as we're in our second full week of baseball? You're grinding your butt off with all kinds of cool Savant and other content for like the daily folks. What do you got?
So you mentioned the lineup analysis, the Savant recaps, which we're catching a lot of fun things to monitor entering the first month of the season and all that. But also this weekly, the weekly hitter chart just kind of got back on track, and it's, we actually added, I was supposed to look at it today, I completely forgot. We added a bullpen section now. So now it has the updated, so it sort of shows you the weekly streamers in terms of like lefties and righties matchups, who like the actual pitchers that they're facing in those matchups for every team. And then the next tab shows the pitchers last three starts and overall stuff number, stuff location, and pitching plus numbers for every single pitcher. So it'll show, for instance, like if you look at Baltimore, they're facing six righties and a lefty. It'll show you the names of all of them on page one and all the lefty righty matchups for Monday through Thursday and Friday through Sunday. So if you play NFBC or weekly, you'll have all that information in one spot. And then the next tab will show you, it'll say Baltimore again. It'll show you the pitchers are facing again with all those stats I just mentioned last three. I think WOBA. I'm trying to remember the other ones, and then the pitching plus numbers, all that good stuff. And then now there's a third tab we added that tracks bullpen stats for the last like 3 weeks or 2 weeks. So now you're getting all of it. You're getting literally all this information in one spot now, and I'm really excited for this chart because I actually used it. That's what that guided some of my own decisions this week too. So it's something, it's fun that I and then of course part of it is I'm at the beginning of the week I do my own notes. So all that playing time analysis I put into it, I pretty much take it and put it all into like one little spot. Like, hey, so these are the trends and look at the matchups, and we put all of it together. Hey, these guys are playing good. They have like three righties, four lefties. You might want to sit these guys, blah, blah, blah. And it kind of just gives you an outline. I do a lot of the heavy lifting with that chart. And that's kind of I know I'm long winded on this. It's supposed to be the way out, but I feel like I haven't promoted that chart enough, and I'm really excited for it. Well, I'm really excited for it, but at the same time, I just haven't had time to promote it. But it's a really awesome project. And luckily we have a guy that we brought aboard to help us with these things. So it's automated. Yeah, so that's what awesome. Keeps it going.
It's awesome. It helps yours. It helps Simeone's SP.
It's streaming going to help yours.
Chart. It's going to help mine. We have a bunch of cool things in mind for like this. Sure. Like if everything goes as our vision is, and we always like to shoot a little higher than reality at times, it's going to make things go to a whole new level, which is really excited to just think about with GTE. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's like the main thing is like, I forgot, I'm like, that's kind of a big deal. We do that chart I'm really excited about. But then also, like I mentioned, honestly, if you just follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Curlin, for those who are still listening, you'll see like I tweet so much of this stuff out anyway. Like I give a lot of little free snippets. It's not like everything's behind a paywall. I tweet a bunch of information out all the time. So it's like, yeah, sure, majority of my content's behind a paywall, so I'm not going to lie and act like it's not. But there's a lot I just tweet out because I can't not, like, I just want to, like, hey, here's more information. Some of it's useless. Hey, here's a random tweet about a player that like with a really cool pitch. And here's my dog. Like, what? Anyway, I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm rambling. So
there we go. And we'll wrap it up there. Curlin always brings the fun and the great information. Always love chatting with him. We'll probably hear from him more often this season just because – we tend to share similar schedules. So it works out really, really well. Make sure you check out Curlin on Twitter at Mike_Curlin, as he mentioned. He works at The Athletic, but more importantly at GTE Fantasy over on the Patreon. So go check that out. He's grinding his ass off. And I've watched him develop into quite the player with his analysis and gameplay. So it's been fun to see. So I recommend, if you're for some reason not checking him out, make sure you do. But we'll wrap it up there. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 582, your week 2 fab recap with the one, the only, Mike Curlin. Catch you guys next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.